Stay tuned.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. So we're here today with John Fowler, who's president and CEO of People's Self-Help Housing. Welcome, John.
Thank you for having me, Neil.
So tell us what People's Self-Help Housing is.
So we're an affordable housing developer. That's what we do. We've done that for 48 years. So we're building affordable housing for low-income people. That's primarily our wheelhouse and what we do. And it's on the three counties here of San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. So we're helping people get a roof over their head.
And one of our sponsors is Habitat for Humanity. But you're different from Habitat.
We are different. And we're a local organization. Obviously, Habitat is a national organization with various affiliates, but we're just here on the Central Coast and started here in San Luis Obispo and just kept expanding from there. But and their model is a little bit different than ours. You know, I think we talked, you and I talked a little bit about that.
Before the show.
Before the show, exactly. And so our model is we originally started helping people get into their own homes, building a home ownership and a sweat equity. And over a year, they would build their own homes, move into it. And that's where People's Self-Help name came from that program.
And you have made quite an impact in these three counties. Over the last 40 years, you've built how many units?
We have a little over, we're approaching 2,000 units over that period of time, multifamily, and then another 1,200 single-family residences that we've helped families build their own home.
Now, the multifamily units you keep in portfolio, you don't...
Those we keep. That's exactly right, because those need to be managed, and they're a partnership. So they're multifamily homes, apartment complexes, if you will, and we have 50 of those locations that we've built since that program began.
So this is radio, so you can't see John, but John is a good-looking guy with a tie and jacket and gray hair. You don't look like you're in the construction business. What's your background? How did you get involved?
Yeah, I told him I'm overdressed for the radio show.
And
I
for
guess,
the job.
Right? And for the job, possibly. So my background is I'm a CPA by profession. That's where I started, and then I got into construction, working with a large developer. From that, I got into working with a bank doing REO, their REO property, for one of the largest banks actually here on the Central Coast, which was Midstate Bank before they were bought by Rabo. And then eventually worked for the Catholic Church, the Diocese of Monterey, and doing all their schools and school sites, and then they own the missions. So I started doing mission restoration. So sort of construction, accounting, real estate, just sort of all came together, and my bent towards giving something back to the community in a nonprofit way.
So when we talk about affordable housing, there are so many misconceptions about what affordable housing is. What is the target tenant slash homeowner that you're looking for, and how do they fit into this whole idea of affordable?
Yeah, so we typically identify them, Neil, if you would, based on an area median income. We call it AMI. And those are the people that are falling, you know, below the means of being able to get into some type of housing without some assistance of some sort. And that's typically somewhere in the 30% of area median income up to 80% of area median income. So, so for someone in this geographical, I would say, our area median income is in the mid-70s. If you take 80% of that, and you're approaching around $50,000 and less is what they're making. And as you can imagine, that would be a tough salary in order to try and get some type of housing in this area.
So over the years, we've talked about various parts of teens' lives that have been impacted because of the fact that they were first-generation Americans. They came from a place of severe poverty. They came from single-family or no-family homes. But one of the most important elements of, or one of the most important factors in determining whether a person is going to succeed is their home. And so we're talking here not just about housing, we're talking about social justice, aren't we?
We are talking about social justice, and that's exactly right. Because, you know, we started out 48 years ago thinking, hey, we put somebody in a home, you know, self-help, help them build their homes, they're off and running, right? And then we even felt that even when we got into multifamily, thinking, you know, you get people off the streets, you get them into a housing, put a roof over, then they have a place to study, a place to cook, a place to provide a resume. But we realized it wasn't just the roof. They needed a little bit more help, and that's where the, you know, resident services came in. So we didn't come to that, you know, naturally or intuitively. We came to it saying putting a roof over someone's house, you know, putting a roof over their head was something that was the beginning. And for honestly, Neil, for me, I've done a lot of construction, done a lot of stuff. What gets me out of bed is the fact that we are actually gives us an opportunity then to reach these families and help them really, prosper and be stabilized.
The model for affordable housing from the 50s was a tremendous failure. If you look at New York, Chicago, there's essentially ghettoized, falling apart multifamily housing. And forgetting about the construction quality for a minute, one of the things that distinguishes what you do is you just don't give people a unit, an apartment. You give them all kinds of help. And I think that's where the difference lies.
It's absolutely where the difference lies. And I share that at every opportunity that I can, because without the additional help, they're not going to succeed. They just simply aren't. They need budgeting help. The seniors need assistance to get to and from doctors. Kids need after school and help to study. And in other words, we realize there are just all kinds of services that they need in order to sort of get themselves up. And so we now, every single development that we build or anyone that we manage for some other nonprofit, we will not do unless there's, you know, resident services available to those residents.
Okay, so let's talk about let's talk about resident services. What are they?
So it's anything. So we have a site manager on each one of our locations. They collect rent and, you know, do all the necessary things. We have maintenance people. But the residents services come in when a resident gets in trouble. So they can't pay their rent. They're having difficulty with their teenager misbehaving. There's, some type of dependency issue going on with one of the parents. Or something. So they have issues that the general population has, and that affects their ability to have housing, because if they can't, stay on their programs, if they can't pay their rent, if they can't do that, they'll be back on the street and not be, be able to succeed and prosper. So we provide that initial contact with them. And so the resident manager will refer it to our resident services, say, go out and meet with Neil and find out what's going on with him, because him and his wife are arguing, or their kids are disruptive, or they're not following the rules of the complex, or they're, so we plug in and go out and meet with the residents, and then we plug them into local services with other nonprofits that specialize in what's going on with that family. So our network of knowing what other services and other nonprofits are doing is important. And then the other nonprofits in the community need a place to deliver their services. And so we have community rooms, and we have the ability to do that. So resident services are pretty, robust, and anything from exercise classes to after-school programs to just general counseling.
What is the scale necessary to provide that? How big a unit, a complex does it have to be to have a resident manager and to have this?
The numbers, when the number crunching, we typically try to get to 40 units. Once you get to 40 units, the numbers start to pencil. You can have a community room, you can have an on-site manager, and you can bring in other nonprofits that can provide services to the residents. So 40 units with a community room is the sweet spot. And if we can get a little bit more, it helps the economics work, but that's the number we shoot for.
Now, for private developers, 40 units is nothing. So one of the things that makes this possible is that you're a not-for-profit.
That's correct. Yeah. So, we have to make a bottom line. We do make a bottom line profit on each development that we do, but it's small. It's regulated by the government as to much. It's just 14%. And they really don't care if your costs go over. That's all you're going to make. And if you've budgeted wrong, then eat your profit. So the market doesn't fix our sins when we start to get into development and costs start to get away from us. We've got to be really great construction people.
It's too bad when the government starts looking to cut Section 8 or
any of these
programs.
Yes.
They should not be, in my view, the political view, it shouldn't be about cutting, it should be about improving. And so right now, the the granting of any assistance is based upon the deal, but not about what the developer is willing to do for the tenants. And, you know, if you're going to have a political view that public housing doesn't really help, think about what could help. And, you know, your model certainly does work.
Oh, it absolutely works. And we've been proving it for 48 years. And it's, you know, it's something all the cities and counties look to. And, like, that model works, and that's what we should encourage. So when we're at the podium, they're like, oh, my gosh, it's people's self-help housing. We love you guys, and we love what you're doing because it's working.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with John Fowler, President and CEO of People's Self-Help Housing. And we're talking about the various programs that self-help is providing all of our communities, and we're talking about affordable housing. So who typically seeks affordable housing in this area? Is it disabled? Is it seniors? Is it veterans? Is it what? First of all, do you get a heads up or a leg up if you're one of those categories, or is it just everyone puts their name in a hat?
Yeah, so that's a good question, and I would say that, you know, so we're helping all of those people that you just mentioned, you know. So it's going to be seniors, it's going to be homeless, it's going to be single women, single men, small families, you know, it's going to be disabled, it's going to be it'll be the whole gamut that we do. There's a large, as you can imagine, a large waiting list on all of our sites. As I mentioned, we have 50 sites. They all have waiting lists. And there's some, you know, those waiting lists matter, and we can't be jumping names and whatever. So, you know, you might have a terrible, heartbreaking story. I can tell you how many times I get a call from a mayor or somebody who says, I've got somebody who's got a terrible story, and I need to get them in housing. And I go, well, wish I could do something, but there are 1,000 people on a waiting list, and I just, you know, who've been waiting patiently to get into that house. So it's a waiting list. On the new site that we just opened here in Santa Barbara, the 40 units, luckily when we do a new site, we get to do a lottery. So you don't have to, you know, and so I encourage all the jurisdictions, like, you know, get your people on that list because they could literally win the lottery. But you'll have 400 people in the lottery, 40 units. And so, you know, it's a sweet and sad story.
Why is there so little self-help housing in Santa Barbara versus Slo and Ventura?
Well, you know,
Be careful.
Yeah. I will be. You know, it's multifaceted is the problem. Obviously, you know, to do affordable housing here with real estate and everything so expensive, it's difficult. It's a lot of infill. I mean, the site that we did here was an infill site that was a trash dump. I mean, it had toxic and had to be cleaned up. It was a site nobody wanted. And it took us years to clean it up and get it right. And now, you know, finding a site that's large enough, as we mentioned, you want to get at least 40 units with a community room, you need at least an acre of property. Where are you going to find an acre in the city of Santa Barbara or San Luis Obispo or any other? So it gets difficult to find a location. Then the funding sources, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, the funding sources at the federal level are dwindling. We've seen that for years, and the federal government has been telling us, stop looking to us. Defense is important. Other things are important, but not discretionary spending. And that's where you guys are at. So start looking to the states. Start looking to the cities and the counties. Those are where you need to find resources. So we've seen that shift coming. And so, you know, we're cobbling it together. And they used to, you know, we used to have $1.7 billion of redevelopment money that the state of California had. But then the governor decided, hey, I got a budget issue and I'm going to pull all that money. I'm not crazy about the program. So he pulled all the money, and that money dried up almost overnight. So funding sources have been drying up for us on the federal level. Luckily, that we've seen some movement at the state now, that is last year, about thinking affordable housing. We've all seen the numbers of homeless in the street just grow and grow and grow. And so so we're starting to see a resurgence of let's look at sales tax, let's look at bonds, let's look at, you know, other ways that we can raise money to take care of affordable housing. And now the issue, Neil, as you look at, it's not just people who are making 30 to 80%. Now all of a sudden, it's people who make 80% to 160% of area income can't get in the market. The supply isn't there, and even if it was, they probably couldn't afford it on their salary, right? So now we're talking about workforce housing. There's no subsidy for workforce housing. So we are actually coming up with a solution for workforce housing as well. Went to the board and said, listen, it's affordable housing. It's just in a different income bracket, right? So availability, funding, you know, these are all things that just make affordable housing and workforce housing extremely difficult.
There was a study a couple of years ago about the percentage of people that have $400 in their bank account if right. they needed it for an automobile emergency repair. And like 40% of people didn't. And so when people criticize homeless people, now there are some people with mental illness and some people sure. who have drugs, but there are homeless, quote unquote, homeless people that were just one paycheck away from being homeless. And people don't understand that. You know, they look at it as sort of like a negative. These people are homeless. Why should I help them? Well, take a look at your own bank account. Right. And if you don't have a family and you have some bad luck, you could end up in the same position living in your car.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's surprising. And they do. These are real people with real stories. And yes, there is a segment of the population that, you know, wants to be on the street. But there's a section that got there because of a job loss, because of a death in the family, because of a number of things that have happened. And I mean, I can tell you stories, Neil. These are real people. And I think if people knew them, I mean, I think of a gentleman who moved out here with his wife and his boy several years ago. And in the course of it, his wife passed away here. And he just was devastated by that, as you can imagine. And then his son died. And emotionally, the man just tanked. And he went out onto the streets and everything. He was an intelligent, hardworking person with a job through, you know, no circumstances of his own. Life dealt him some real blows. We got him up off the street. He's got a job. We got him in housing. He's coming back mentally. But he needed help.
So is one of the qualifications citizenship? Because one of the things that right now we're talking about in Southern California is this whole issue of DACA and the immigration issue. Do you have to be a citizen to get into one of your houses?
It varies by funding source, and we do have some that doesn't require that. But a large part of what we do is financed by the Department of Agriculture, USDA, and they absolutely require you cannot house anybody that isn't a U.S. citizen. So, nearly half of our facilities are financed by the USDA, and those who have the money make the rules. We follow them, and so it is difficult. But we do have some sites that, you know, we don't have to check citizenship, but many we do.
So, how many people do you serve each year?
So we have about 5,000 people we take care of on a daily basis. You know, that are residents and families. And that number is growing. We have a big, I would say, little over 3 years ago, we decided that homelessness obviously was a huge issue. The cities and the mayors were telling us this. So we now, with every single development we have, 10% of those units will be homeless units. For homeless people to get, so whether it's Goleta or Santa Barbara or whatever it might be, we then say at least 10. So the project that we just did, we just opened a few months ago here in Santa Barbara, 40 units, that means 8 of those would be for homeless. So
they jump the line then if you're homeless?
They're a special category and separate from their funding requirements. Mm-hmm. And so we just said this is what we do because we do the housing. We're going to say this is going to be the population because how are we going to get these people off the street? We have to have housing for them.
Yeah. How do you prepare them for, if you're just giving them one of the single family units, how do you prepare them for home ownership?
Well, we're initially just trying to get them in off the street and get a roof over their head and provide the services. So, you know, the number of people who actually, we'd like to think more people move from the multifamily, and, you know, once they're stabilized in housing, into the single family. Not as many people do that, Neil, as we'd like. They don't think their credit is okay. They don't think they see themselves as a homeowner. They don't have the savings. So it's difficult. We are always giving them classes and, hey, you know, we think you're ready. We think you're ready to move out of a multifamily, and we have a program. It's a big commitment, but you know, we don't have as big a conversion as I'd like to have.
Because one of the things that I'm not sure is founded on any actual fact is that when people have looked at the housing complexes in the big cities that have been essentially devastated, they say, well, people weren't ready for their own apartment. They didn't have any skin in the game, and they need to have skin in the game. I'm not so sure that's the case. And I think your success with people who are renters sort of belies that whole.
Absolutely does. Yeah, it's believe me, they're very appreciative, and the success stories, not only for the initial residents that get in there, but the next generation that goes on to, you know, to do well in school and to become productive citizens in the community, and then they come back and help their parents and they move on. So, you know, they're definitely, you know, they're looking for a hand up, not a handout, and that's very, very clear.
It's really amazing that, you know, there are so many not-for-profits in this town, and we have had and will have continue to have probably most of them on this show. But, you know, you keep a very low profile for the kind of impact that you have, and that's one of the good reasons that you're here today, I hope.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. And, you know, people kind of say, hey, people self-healing, you're one of the best-kept secrets ever.
Right.
I had no idea.
Yeah, but you've only been around 45 years. So
48 years.
So what do you expect?
Yeah. I think maybe when we celebrate our 50, we'll do a big splash, and maybe people will like, oh, yeah, well,
Santa Barbara's very different because I've been here 19 years, and I said, am I now an old-timer? And they said, you're an old-timer four generations. So 19 years is a newcomer. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping improve attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with John Fallow, President and CEO of People's Self-Help Housing. And one of the things that we haven't talked about yet is the whole idea of sweat equity. And there is sweat equity in one of our sponsors, Habitat for Humanity, but specifically, how does sweat equity work with your construction?
Yeah. So, again, as we said, we started this 48 years ago doing sweat equity. So we will acquire the land, the subdivision, if you will, and we like to do these, acquire the land, and then we sell the lot to a family through a program that the USDA has. And they acquire the lot with a construction loan, and they are then build their house. So it's their lot. And we help them in their construction loan, and then there's a perm loan at the end of it that they take out as a mortgage. And so the difference between what the value of that house is and what it costs is their sweat equity, and that's where they get their down payment, if you will. So there's some margin in that, and that makes it appraise and be something that can be financed for less than 100%.
Yeah, but sweat equity, I think, means more than just that. They actually work on this house.
Oh, absolutely.
So this is not just some investor saying, you know, I'm going to get sweat equity for the difference between what I improve
it
and
is
what
literal.
This
sweat.
Is you got to be willing to pick up, get a hammer holster on, right?
Absolutely.
And
they
have friends
no
that
guns,
will help you.
They have everything, and so they build this house over a little over it takes a little over a year for them to do that, and they have to commit in writing, and we keep them accountable every week to this, 40 hours working on that home every single week, in addition to their job, what they're doing during the day, because obviously they got to keep their job and provide for their family. So they have to have a certain income and stability in their job to be able to qualify for the program, and then be willing to work 40 additional hours every week. Now, you can get people to volunteer. You know, your spouse or your partner or somebody else can be part of that. So maybe you only do 20 hours and they do 20, and if you're lucky, maybe you can find some other friends. But you've got to get 40 hours work on that house every single week for a little over a year.
But you're not just throwing them to, you know, someone who doesn't have any experience on the lot. You have expertise that you're helping them.
So what I would tell you, we actually are throwing them on the lot with absolutely no expertise, and that's where we come in, because USDA provides us what they call a technical assistance grant. It's like a site supervisor. So we will do these homes in groups of 10, and so 10 families at one time will be building their houses from the foundation all the way through the roof and landscaping, and we put a supervisor on that site that is there every moment that they're there. You're saying, you know that trench isn't going to be a foundation for the, a good trench for the foundation. And we went all the way through making sure that that house gets built to code and to standards that are, you know, obviously need to be met. So, but they don't have to have any experience. We have all the experience and our expertise and then run them through that with our site supervisors. And again, that technical grant is provided by the U.S. government. So.
I can't imagine. I mean, forget about that. I have plenty of time. I just don't have any talent.
You don't have to have any talent. You just have to have a desire to keep your day job and work 40 more hours above that, and then we'll teach you the rest.
Of course, you're a financial guy like me, and yet you became an expert in building by working with the Catholic Church.
Absolutely.
So you are able to build. You could build your own house, right? Or you could build a church, even better.
I could build a church. I've built missions. I've built retreat centers. You name it. I've been a lot. And plus, I've done a lot of single family. I started doing single family residence for a for-profit developer.
Do they call you at the office Michelangelo?
Or they call me Hurricane Fowler. So we're going to get it done. We're going to get it done.
So one of the things that really distinguishes what you do is that you, as an organization, really care about having maybe a holistic is too fancy a word, but is to look at the tenant as almost your family, and trying to break the cycle of poverty.
Absolutely.
And so you have a whole bunch of initiatives that attempt to deal with not just a roof, but also with making people succeed in life. And one of the statistics that you bring to the table, which is really amazing, is that It takes, I guess, the reading. You have to, if your reading score isn't up to grade by the third grade, or your math score isn't up to grade by the fifth grade, you're pretty much doomed for failure academically.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're if you're in in poverty at this point, your family's in poverty, and you start to you're falling behind already from people who already have a roof over their head and all the other things that they, you need to succeed. So you're already statistically already going to fall behind if you don't hit some of these important benchmarks. Being able to read at grade level by third grade is one of the important ones. The other is your math skills at fifth grade. You lose confidence. You're falling behind year by year, and if you don't hit those marks, whether you're in poverty or not, whether you're a low-income family or not, you are going to fall behind and dramatically each year.
Okay, so what do you do about it? As a landlord, most landlords could care less. What do you do about it?
Well, again, as I said, we sort of came to this saying, hey, we're a houser. We build houses. Here's a roof over your head. God bless you. Great job. We're going to go on to the next house. And as this happened 16 years ago, three families came to us in Carpinteria, and there's three families, mothers, and from my past executive director, Jeanette Duncan, who was here, and said, listen, our kids are falling behind. English isn't their first language. I can't help them. I barely speak English. You've got to do something. My kids are going to stay in poverty. And we looked, she looked at her like, we don't do school. We build homes. And so she drug in a picnic table, and they started helping the kids with their homework. That led to a trailer and brought it on site. And we started, and then we, got somebody to do, mentoring and tutoring. We started, and from that program 16 years ago, we now have 10 sites, 300 students, and we have a robust, fully functioning after-school program with educators statistics and outcomes, and we are the envy of the school districts. And they're saying, I know what you're doing on those school sites, but those are our best kids. And these are the kids that statistically would have been least likely to succeed.
How do you pay for that?
So it's an interesting thing. Some of it's donation, and some of it as I told you, we have 50 locations. We take a little bit out of each location and took that. We take our own profits that we make as a nonprofit, and we roll that into the program. So it's a $2.5 million program now that we run, and we've just learned over the 16 years how to cobble that together. Sometimes it's getting foundations, local foundations. The Santa Barbara Foundation here is a big contributor. The after-school program is a huge initiative of theirs, and they're a big partner of ours. We have our subcontractors who work on our sites. He says, what you guys are doing is amazing. We want to kick some of our profits back to you. So it is donations. It is our own profits. And we also have a program for our staff. We have almost 200 staff, Neil. Can you believe this? So they are elected. They can elect to take part of their salary and put it tax deferred into the after-school program or resident services. So many of ours. So we raise probably somewhere between $15,000 and $20,000 a year internally from our own staff who says, we believe in what we're doing here. And they contribute. So you cobble this together, and you fund the program because the outcomes are undeniable. And
so, what do you do about single family homes? If there's a multifamily house nearby, a single family home, can they go across the street?
They can. It doesn't as much, but they are available to do that. It's not something that we need to work better on because we help them build their family. Build their home. They build it, and we go on and do the next and to the next family. And we realize, those families probably need the same kind of services as well, and we need to find funds and try and welcome them in. They can come to the after-school programs if they're located, centrally.
Well, free advice is worth what you pay for it, so let me give you some free advice. It seemed to me that this would be a great fundraiser for fundraising story independent of what you do. Just the idea that you're providing on-site academic and probably some sort of behavioral aid as well to kids would be something that would interest a lot of people. You could almost carve that out as a separate charity.
There's two things that we do. One is the resident services. One is the after school. And we have a whole new initiative that's going to go, and we're going to do exactly what you're talking about now.
So I don't have to charge you then for this advice. You're already going to do it?
No, but you can help me do it.
Well, how do people donate to you right now?
So, you know, it's People Self Help Housing. It's our website. You just go there, .com, and peopleselfhelphousing.com, I mean, www. And you can go to our website, and there's a donation page there. But you're going to find we're everywhere. We're trying to get the word out, best kept secret, as we talked a little bit earlier. But so they can donate that way. And we are now what we put together what we call a business plan. In the last 2 months, I've been working on this. It's a program that it's a business plan that I actually didn't intend to do. But when we went across the country and sort of looked at after school programs the last 2 years and tried to figure out what are they doing, what are we doing peer to peer, and came up with a business plan. And now we're going to launch this business plan as a, hey, why don't you jump on board, donor, and support something that's working, has worked for 16 years, and can make a better reach and a broader reach. And
great idea. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a 4-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a 4-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with John Fowler, President and CEO of People's Self-Help Housing. And we're talking about their program to break the cycle of poverty through education. And we're learning that this is really on the cutting edge of programs. They've looked at other programs throughout the country.
Yes.
Is there any, you know, AHA spends a good deal of its time on social-emotional learning and, you know, the issues of bullying and becoming, you know, someone who has empathy. Are there modules or are there things like that in your program, or is it all about math and science? And
no, it's a holistic, as you mentioned earlier. It's the holistic approach to the kids because they need everything. So they not only need the basic tools, which is the reading and the math, they also need help, you know, getting their study habits. They also have issues going on at home that we now, you know, we know those families because they are housed with us. They're in our locations, so we know the parents, we know the siblings, and so we can deal with the family unit issues while we're trying to make sure that the educational is being dealt with. And then as the kids grow, they need to go, they need to do, what do you call it, college visitations. We now created a scholarship program where we bring donors in. We help them with their FAFSA. And then we found that we also have to follow them all the way through college. that they still need this little mentoring. So we created what we call a college program on the end of it to say, even when you graduate and you go on to Berkeley or someplace else, you get nervous your first year. You get, you know, you're missing your family or whatever, or you're thinking, I'm not sure I should be here. We walk them through. They call us and we say, you know, you're exactly where you need to be, or we tell the parents, let them go to college. They need to do this thing. They're going to be fine. You don't need them to come home and help with the family. So we help them on all those fronts.
So who runs this program? Is it an educator, or is it who? This is a whole different skill set than building houses.
It started with somebody, as we said, this evolved over 16 years. So we have Alejandro Mahoney, I will tell you, who was initially helping us, you know, drag the table, you know, get the trailer, and it evolved. And she was an educator, and we just evolved and learned what we need to do. And again, sort of reluctant that we didn't intend to do after-school education, but we sort of ended up and realized that that's what they needed in order to break the cycle of poverty. It's critical. So then we did, and I think, I wanted to mention that. So we started looking at this after 16 years and said, well, we sort of evolved and created this our own intuitively. What are other people doing, and what are other programs in the country? And so 2 years ago, we went and said, we heard there's a program in Boulder called Bringing School Home. There's one in Austin, and then there's I Have a Dream Foundation in New York. What are they doing? Do we need to create the will? Maybe they should come here and run our program if we can recruit them and whatever. So we spent 2 years. I took my staff and we flew to those states, and we visited them. We talked with their staff, and we walked away after and said, we've got a pretty good program here. And you know what? Their model is going to start tracking with what we're doing, because they realize it's the site-based model, the holistic, where you know the families, you know the siblings, you know the issues that beyond the academics. You need all the academics, but you also need it. The one in Boulder actually took the 20 students in grade 3 and followed them for 20 years, right? But only those 20 students. And we said, well, wait a second. We're taking every student who's in our housing, regardless of their academic, but they wanted sort of this, hey, I'm going to take the best and brightest and show that, you know, low-income people can actually achieve. And we said, no, we're going to take every single student every year and put them through the program. And they go, wow, maybe that's the model. So they're moving their model to ours. And I said, well, we don't need to bring them here. We just need to do ours and incorporate. One of the things that we learned there was the aha moment was that it's site-based. It's the relationship with the family and the students that makes the difference, that you can mentor them and get them through, that you take them, you know, and they create a culture on our sites. So now we have 10 locations, as I say, 300. We want to open up 3 more locations. That's the plan. It's all about money. It's, you know, we got to find money to do this. And, it, you know, it takes almost, about $75,000 per site to be able to do this. So you just do the multiplier. We got to find that much more money. But we came back, did a business plan, and said, our 3-year goal now is to grow this program, incorporate what we learned in those cities, and build a program that will be revolutionary, cutting edge, as you mentioned, and everybody will come to our sites and say, what are you doing that's so successful? Well, the kids now are 100% of them will graduate from high school. You know, all of them will go to college or a trade school or a, you know, junior college. And, we also realize a second benefit, there's no teen pregnancies at any one of our students. We have 0 teen pregnancies at any one of these sites. So education, culture, it's not just the academics and the reading and the math. It's the holistic approach to education.
How do you deal with age differences? You have everything from a 5-year-old to an 18-year-old. Yes. You have 20 teachers. How do you do it?
So it's a teacher ratio, and that's one of the things we learned in Austin, is that we got to get that teacher. So that was part of our business plan. It says we got to get these, you know, we're at, a teacher and a volunteer of 20 students. We need a better ratio. And we need another level so that the curriculums get taken care of while the teachers are teaching. And so we learned the structure that needs to be in place, which is really going to drive up our cost to be able to sort of put the right structure. But we're convinced this is the right thing. And then we came up with 9 measurements. That was the deal when I went to Boulder and I said, what are you measuring? How do you know your after-school program is successful? I mean, what are you doing with it? How do you know? Nobody could answer that question, Neil. And I said, we're going to answer that question for everybody. We're going to create 9, I think it's 8 actually, outcomes. You know, reading level, math levels, graduation, from high school, graduate from college, first job after 6 months. These are things that will become the norm for you to say, that's a successful after-school program. And nobody else is going to be able to say that unless they measure these. So when someone would pull me in Boulder, says, well, that's very bold of you to think you can. I said, you know what? I'm going to put 8 outcomes and measurements, and I'm going to do that. And then you're welcome to come back and say, well, number 8 doesn't work in Boulder, or do whatever. But start someplace, because none of you, what I came here was to say, how do I know this program is working, other than the life stories that I see? How do I know this is the right thing?
Well, you sound like a donor, because what's happened the last 15 years in philanthropy, the donors have changed. You know, the old people who were giving money so their name could be on some building somewhere are dying out. And the people who are giving money today are, you know, dot-comers, you know, 40-year-olds, 45-year-olds, and they look for metrics. They look for statistics to show that there is.
They should, right?
And they should. And so many charities just do it based on, anecdotal evidence. And that's not good enough for a lot of people.
Bar in this, and we're going to raise the bar, and some people may not be happy with that, but we're going to say, listen, are you measuring these 8 outcomes, and where are you on them? Well, no, we're not. Really? And you want what money for what?
Yeah. What are you going to? What happens when a father of a kid decides there's a great job opportunity in Maine? It's difficult for a kid to move anyway, but now he has this after the school program. He's doing well in school. I mean, there must be some. Some resistance. You've got a great deal here.
Yeah.
So does it keep turnover very low?
You know, it's not just that. It's just, Neil, if you look at it, there's no supply for moving around here particularly, right? I mean, where are you going to go? And there's not a lot of places you can afford to go, you know, if you're low income. So moving around is not a big concern, with our residents, because like everybody else, you can't find a place that you can rent that's within your ability to pay. So we have a good ability to hold on to people from their housing, because the housing is keeping them there, let alone the after-school program.
What percentage of the people in the multifamily housing have kids?
Oh, we have all kinds of different. So we have 10 senior sites. They don't have any kids. So they're strictly 100% seniors. So out of that 50 locations. So, but we have a number of families sites. And of those, we'll have, in any one location, we'll have somewhere between 20 and 30 kids in a 40-unit development.
And so with low turnover, though, as the kids get older, the school has to change a little bit, as don't they? I mean, the program, the teaching for that particular site.
Yeah,
so kind of grows with the kids.
It does grow with the kids, and that's where the teachers come in. And we evolved in the program where we're gonna have, you gotta have credentialed teachers in this programs, and they have to be able to work with different age groups. And you can help somebody who's in third grade and then work on math, or somebody who's in high school. I mean, you can able to do that if the ratio is there. And so we have educators who can accomplish that.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Back with our final segment.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with John Fowler, President and CEO of People's Self-Help Housing. And one thing we haven't talked about is the benefit of your programs to local employers. You're providing not only work space housing, but you're providing them with customers, too. I mean, to get a viable community, you need housing.
Absolutely. You know, housing is housing, and it's an economic driver, you know, and these people are shopping, they're buying, and they're, you know, it's a great economic driver for the community. And so and people do not always understand that kind of how it works. Plus, a place for these, you know, these employers need workers, and they need a place where they can live and not have to commute.
And volunteers, you can donate, in a sense, to your organization if you don't have money by volunteering.
Absolutely.
And what are the volunteer opportunities that there are?
So we have all kinds of volunteer opportunities. In fact, there's so many, we've been trying to keep track of them. We created an internal app now to track volunteers. So you can go on our website and say, you know, I'm interested in helping a community garden at one of these locations, and I'd like to be able to do that. I'd like to visit the seniors. I'd like to work in the after-school program. I'd like to help you put on an event that talks about health and housing and these kind of. So you just go on our website and you'll filter through it. You say where you want, you know, where geographically you are located, where you'd like to volunteer, what kind of services you think or things you'd be involved in, and then we sort through that. And when that opportunity comes up, we give you a call.
And if you look at a pie chart of where your money comes from and where your money comes out, how much of it is donations, non-governmental donations?
Yeah, so donations are probably around $500,000 a year, Neil. That's probably, you know, out of a almost a $12 million budget.
So where does the majority of the $12 million come
from? So most of it comes through development. We're a development company. We're building development, you know. And a lot of that is the grant program. We get a lot of grants, a couple million dollars of grants, and the helping the families build their own homes. So there's some grants that come through that that help us provide those services. So we get, you know, grants for building the houses and what have you. So it's a number of different sources. And then we also build, and we get a small profit for anything that we build. So that goes into our bottom line as well.
So do you get tax? Do you get tax credit vouchers you can sell to banks and or give the banks as a way of them incentivizing them to help you?
Yeah. So there is a tax credit program for building, and So what we do is we put a program together, throw it up at the state, and say, you know, here's a housing project, costs $50 million. They give us state tax credits. We sell those on the open market to the large banks. There'll be Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Chase, Wells, you name them, all the banks. And they buy those tax credits, and then we invest that money to build the units themselves.
So you're not as concerned. You don't have to be as concerned as other programs given the government cutbacks. You have a model that sort of is much more viable, even if there were direct government grant cutbacks.
Yeah, and it's competitive, and it is dwindling because you saw tax reform came through, and so those investments are worth less because of the tax code, you know, the rates drop. But a substantial part of it comes through the tax program for us, right?
And the annual events that you have, is there a special event you have, like most places have some kind of big event at the end of a year or the beginning of a year?
Yeah, we've kind of ebbed and flowed on that. Haven't done it ever. We used to do something every year or every other year. At this point, we do an annual appeal, and we send that out to our donor base and what have you, and then we do other fundraising. But we don't have a specific event or gala coming up, unfortunately.
Well, John, thank you so much. And when I have a good guest like you, I typically say, you know, you have to come back. But
Actually, you will be back. I have another show right here on AM 1290 called Money Talk, which is on Mondays at 2. And on August 6th, John will be our guest on Money Talk. So if you enjoy this show, it should even be better next time. Thank you so much for all you do. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be back next week.
It's